Hi, this is Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out the podcast for Connecting Faith. You can hear the show each Monday through Thursday at noon Central. And remember, there are even more shows available on our website, myfaithradio.com.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Can you hear the coins? 48 cents. That's what I had in my pocket here today.
Wealth.
Yes, well, we're in light of our conversation coming up, I think that I'll be able to relate quite well, I think, with today's guests. So Neil Stavem here, Ryan Nisley there. This is Connecting Faith. Did you collect coins as a young man?
So. Well, we did make an effort to collect all those state quarters when they did the special state quarter presentation. We had the big map with all the state pictures, and we would place the quarters within the states. That was very exciting.
How about precious metals, gold, anything like that? So now, of course, you're an oil baron now, kind of, right? So that's a whole different story.
I found what I thought was an old fort in the side of a hill one time, and I didn't want to tell anybody because I thought maybe General Custer was in there.
Sure, okay.
He was not.
It was okay.
Good. He was not there.
I went the gold investment in my teeth. So gold crowns. So.
Looking good, man.
My kids, they each get one when I pass on. That's the legacy I'm leaving for them. All right, let's get to today's discussion. It's money related, not quite so much gold teeth, I don't think. But looking forward to chatting with Ed Moy, who served the American people as the 38th director of the U.S. Mint from 2006 to 2011. And he works in energy field now. It also serves as chief strategist for Morgan Gold, which is one of the largest gold companies on the planet. And he resigned as director of the U.S. Mint in January 2011, began diversifying his portfolio. Nominated in June of 2006, confirmed unanimously by the United States Senate, was sworn in September 5 of 2006 for a five-year term. And of course, if you know your history, you know between 2006 and 2011, there was a pretty serious financial crisis there, right in the middle of that. So we're happy to have Ed Moy on the line with us, and also want to find out a little bit about his faith journey as well. Ed, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Neil, delighted to be with you, and all that nice banter doesn't get you any free samples.
Okay, all right. Wow, we just thought we'd set that up so well, but I'm assuming that you didn't retire from the U.S. Mint because you were sampling too much, right? That wasn't.
I was very privileged to serve in a very rare position that allowed me to be there for a whole 5 years, regardless of the president.
Okay, I want to hear a little bit about your story. I mean, we were just chatting off air. Did you? Kind of collect coins as a kid, and is that how you got interested in the mint? And we want to find out a little bit more about that.
This will show you what a great country we have. My parents were legal immigrants. They came here to the United States to find a better place. My dad was born in mainland China, my mom in Hong Kong. They came here and started restaurants and pulled themselves up by their bootstraps. And as a little kid working in my dad's restaurant, I would be counting the change and giving out change when people would pay. And so I noticed all the different kinds of coins that came through. And even for a penny, there were Lincoln cents with wheat ears on the back or the Lincoln Memorial. There were Indian head cents that tells you how old I am. And I started just putting aside the special ones and just replacing them, with modern coins. And that's how I became a coin collector at about age 8 or 9 when I could do math. And who knew that 40 years later I'd be sworn in as the 38th Director of the United States Mint. That's why I love this country. Stories like that can't happen in any other country but the United States of America.
It is amazing, isn't it? So what is the U.S. Mint officially? And it's not just a big warehouse, right?
Right. United States Mint officially is a manufacturing operation. our first priority is to make the country's coins. So all the pennies, dimes, nickels, quarters, dollar coins that you have in your pocket, those are all made by the United States Mint. It's a government agency, but we are funded by selling those coins to the Federal Reserve, which is our central bank. And through that, it's my job to make sure we do that profitably. And during my time at the Mint, we booked about $1 billion in profit each year. So that all goes to benefit the taxpayers.
Hmm. And there's several places, right? Is there, Colorado, Philadelphia? No, where are they?
Yeah, so there's a number of locations. Washington, D.C. is our administrative headquarters, but then you also have Denver and Philadelphia, which make our circulating coins. You also have San Francisco, which makes our collector's coins. You have West Point in New York, which makes our precious metal bullion. So the United States Mint makes both silver and platinum and gold bullion coins. And then we also have responsibility over Fort Knox in Kentucky, where most of our nation's gold reserves are located.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Fort Knox.
We could, Neil, but I'd have to kill you.
Okay, all right, sure. I was just wondering if there was if you had still a copy of the keys. I thought we could talk. No, but I think one of the questions that maybe we'll get into, we'll talk a little bit about policy and stuff, but is there enough gold to back our dollars today? That's, I think, one of the concerns that, we have about how does this all work out. But was that the original idea, that every piece of currency would be backed up with a representation of some precious metal?
Yes. So there are a couple of questions in there, so let me take them in order. The first one is people wonder if there's gold in Fort Knox. I've been there many times. There is gold in Fort Knox. So each year, the Inspector General audits that gold, and that audit report becomes available to the public. So those who are interested just have to type in Office of the Inspector General, look for the Fort Knox audit, and you'll find out exactly how much gold we have in Fort Knox. That gold, when our country was first founded, in the Constitution, they needed a common currency, because at that time we were using European currencies as well as each state had theirs. And our founding fathers were insightful enough to know that we needed a unified currency in order to become a great country. So from that, all the early currency made in the United States had specific tie-ins with the value of gold and silver. So in other words, there's a set ratio between the value of silver is to equal X amount of gold, and then our dollars equaled that precious metal. So it was completely backed by something tangible like gold or silver. And that was the case until about 1933, when in the midst of the huge financial crisis we had, President Roosevelt took us off the gold standard and began requiring that Americans turn in all their gold to the federal government so the government could control it, and it would no longer be linked as directly to the dollar. And since the 70s, after Bretton Woods, which was a big financial conference, after that, any relationship the dollar had with gold was eliminated then. And so today, our dollar is known as fiat currency, which means it is backed by the full faith and credit of the United States, and it is based on the confidence that other people have in our currency.
That sounds like the word fiat seems sort of appropriate to me. Huh. I don't know, just maybe light of how the Italians used to make cars. I think they've gotten a little better now, but anyway.
Yeah, I think they used to joke and say that fiat stood for fix it again, Tony.
Yes, well.
Yes.
Well, so I guess now that you're not in that official position as in the U.S. Mint, I mean, how do you look at the state of our currency and the backing that we have, and the full faith in government? I mean, obviously we have a pretty significant federal debt issue.
Yep. Yeah. Well, our debt is when you take a look at our federal debt limit and our annual deficits, that would be akin to a credit card limit and how much money, how close we are to maxing out on that limit. And the United States has borrowed a lot of money, and some would argue it was necessary to save us from some of the banking issues that we had in 2008. And others would say that we should have tightened our belts. But either way, you know, we are here because of the decisions made. And as far as currency goes, we've made decisions to basically print about $3 to $4 trillion and pump it into the economy to keep things going. So there's way more money out there, and the concern is if the economy doesn't improve enough where our tax revenues help us pay down some of that, then we're going to have to monetize it, which means accept it, and that may cause some inflation. So we've been printing a lot of money lately, and it's worrying a lot of people.
As the director of the Mint, did you have a vote in that discussion, or were you simply just overseeing the manufacturing, if you will?
Yeah, it was more of the latter. You know, so when you get these high government positions, you think you're going to be the decision maker, and sometimes you end up being a conductor on the train. You know, it's on a track. You get to control the speed and the quality of that trip. You know, but nevertheless, you have to deliver it to your destination, and that's what the Mint was. We responded to orders from the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve either responded to policy decisions or from demand from commercial banks.
Well, we're having a great discussion with Ed Moy, who has served as the 38th director of the United States Mint from 2006 to 2011. He serves now as, among other things, chief strategist for Morgan Gold. And we're going to talk a little bit about money, gold. I want to get to some reflections on In God We Trust, which is printed on our money. I'll get some thoughts on that from Ed Moy. Love to have you join the conversation. Maybe you're thinking about some investments or you're a coin collector and just love to join the discussion. You can call us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. Or if it's more convenient, use Facebook. It's Connecting Faith with Neil Stavem. You can connect with us that way. Or even online. There's an email link if you go to our webpage, myfaithradio.com, and click on Connecting Faith, and you can send us an email note, and we'll invite you into the discussion here in just a moment as we continue with Ed Moy on Connecting Faith.
A friend told me the story of a woman in Austria whose father locked her in the basement for over 20 years, and in that time she had children who had never seen the sun or even breathed fresh air. Hey, this is Debbie Griffith with Everyday Matters. To them, the basement was a normal world. When the police found them, the air was so vile they had to tear down walls and bring in fans just to breathe. But it's like we too are living in a basement, a world not perfect, one infected with sin. We don't even realize we're breathing putrid air because this is our normal. But through the acceptance of God's love and forgiveness, we can believe He's a Redeemer, working all things for the good with a purpose for us to serve eternally, breathing pure air forever. You can look to 1 Corinthians 2:9 with anticipation because no eye has seen, no ear has heard, and no mind has imagined what God has prepared for those who love Him every day. For more encouragement, visit DebbieGriffith.com.
Seventeen past the hour, talking today with Ed Moy. Ed served as the 38th director of the United States Mint for 5 years from 2006 to 2011. Now serves as chief strategist for Morgan Gold. But during that time, Ed's tenure at the U.S. Mint, of course, so we went through a significant financial crisis in our nation. So we'll kind of talk a little bit about that as we go along. But Ed, just, you know, some of the things that you've talked about in terms of, you know, how much money is in circulation, all that. What is our money worth? I mean, you know, a dollar's not worth a dollar anymore, was it ever, I guess, or was a quarter still worth a quarter?
It's a very interesting question. Any country goes off a standard that's based on precious metals, which most of the world has done, the value of currency, you know, who figures that out? And bottom line is, because of the strength of and prestige of the United States, the U.S. dollar is what most currencies peg their values off of. And so then you have to ask the question, well, then how does the dollar determine its value? And it gets down to that phrase, full faith and credit in the United States, which gets to the question that you asked before the break on the national debt. So here's how that's all connected. When we borrow money, you have to pay it back. And in the Constitution, in the amendments, there's one amendment that says that the country's debt has to be paid back first before anything else in government, because that will increase the confidence that countries have in the U.S. dollar. Once we default on that, then you end up having huge problems. And so that's why that amendment was passed, is to make sure that our country pays its debts first. And so as long as it does that and people have confidence that America is going to continue being a great country, that keeps the world financial system afloat.
Hmm. Yeah. You said I think we'd added, you know, $3 or $4 trillion additional dollars, but how much money is in circulation? I mean, U.S. currency right now.
Yeah, that that again is a hard question. I can tell you, as far as hard hard currency, meaning coins and bills, between that, it's estimated that there's about $1.2 trillion in coins and bills that are in people's pockets, or you know, in safety deposit boxes, or in jars all over the United States. But that's not the only currency that we have. There's been an explosion of electronic currency over the last 20 years or so, and it's estimated that that magnitude is several multiples beyond what's in physical currency out there.
Well, speaking of jars, let's talk about pennies and coins. I mean, is there any reason to keep the penny? And what do you recommend we turn them in if we have them sitting in jars at home?
Well, I have a couple thoughts on that, which is a lot safer to express now that I'm no longer a director of the Mint.
Okay.
First of all, as I was explaining before, the Mint produces coins for a country, and our federal, our central bank pays for them. So when you produce a penny, the Federal Reserve gives us one penny for it. If we produce a quarter, the Federal Reserve gives us a 25 cents for that quarter. If we can produce those coins for less than what the face value is, like for a quarter, it takes us about 10 cents to produce a quarter. So if the Fed gives you 25 cents, that gives you a 15 cent difference, which is a profit, and you get to bank that, and that goes back to the American people. On the penny, it costs about 2.3 cents to make a penny. And if the Federal Reserve gives you only 1 cent for it, you lose 1.3 cents for every penny you make. If you make 8 billion pennies, like the Mint did 2 years ago, you can lose $75 million a year off of that. And so a lot of people have asked the question, what's the utility of the penny, and shouldn't we be getting rid of it? So my answer is this. If for cost purposes, gosh, it makes a lot of sense. But then there's minor ramifications. In a very tight economy, I know people that live hand to mouth, and every penny counts. So if the grocery store owes you 4 cents and change, you want that, because that adds up to some real money that can buy more groceries. And then a lot of charities depend on it. The other thing is, the Constitution gives the Congress full authority to make that decision, not the United States Mint. So Congress would have to pass a law getting rid of the penny, and given that they can't even cut the rate of increase in the deficit, I doubt that they're going to get around to eliminating the penny anytime soon.
That may not be the first on their priority list, probably. So.
Right.
Although, maybe they could actually agree on something like that, and it might be a start, I suppose. But
Here's one interesting point, though. Many developed countries, from Australia to New Zealand to the Canada and the European Union, There's a big trend going on, and that is they get rid of their lowest denomination coin, like the penny. They put into circulation a high denomination coin, like the dollar coin, and then they get rid of the lowest denomination bill, like the $1 bill. And with that, there's a huge amount of cost savings for each of those countries. You get rid of the expense that it takes to make the penny. A dollar coin will normally cost you 20 cents to make, and the Federal Reserve pays you a dollar. So that 80-cent difference is a profit to the taxpayers. And then when you take a look at dollar bills, they wear out in about 18 months or so, whereas it costs maybe 4 cents to make a dollar bill. And if you have a dollar coin, that lasts for about 40 years, and it costs you 20 cents to make. It doesn't take long until the math begins working out very positively for the American people.
But we didn't really care for the Susan B. Anthony, did we? I mean,
and the presidential dollar coin started off with a bang and then faded.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess we still like to, we don't want our pockets to weigh down quite that much, I guess, right?
Yeah, you know, but, you know, I take issue with that. You know, obviously I'm a big fan of coins, and, you know, people don't carry 25 singles in their wallet. They're not going to carry $25 coins in their pocket either. And here's the big difference. If you go and buy a soda pop at a vending machine and put in a $10 bill for $2 soda, you're going to get 32 quarters back.
Hmm.
You know, you'd rather get $8 coins back.
That's a good point. All right. We can't argue with the former director of the U.S. Mint, much as we're trying. But,
I'm hearing enough warm stuff that you may get a free sample by the end of the interview time.
Say, Ed, now that you're in a good mood, let me ask you this. This is producer Ryan. I was listening as you were explaining the law that's actually entrenched about paying back the debt, and I was wondering as you were talking about that, if it is true that the government has to pay back the debts first, then what about the national debt? How is that allowed to continue to exist? Or is it, you know, somehow just referring to the yearly deficit? Or how does that work?
Okay. So the amendment really refers to when you borrow money, it's like a loan, and eventually that loan is due. And what the amendment basically says is when that loan's due, the United States has to make paying off that loan a top priority. What you have in the national debt, which is $16.4 trillion these days, is the accumulation of that, just kind of like a credit card balance that's carried forward and forward and forward. But eventually, you got to make payments on that credit card. And the fear here is, as that debt gets so big, the interest alone, people bring into question, when is the point where that interest gets so big the United States can't even pay the interest payments on it?
Yeah,
and you know, at the rate that our national deficit's growing, we're getting too close to that point.
Mm-hmm. Ed Moy has served as the director of the U.S. Mint back from 2006 to 2011. Before that, he served in the White House as special assistant to the president for presidential personnel from 01 to 06, where he met the president regularly to recommend candidates for presidential appointees in the general areas of human, natural, and cultural resources. He also served in the presidential transition back in before 2001, and graduated from the University of Wisconsin. So he's one of us, almost, here, part of the Faith Radio Network. And we're finding out today a little bit about money, and now Ed serves as one of his responsibilities, chief strategist for Morgan Gold. Do want to talk a little bit about the gold investing in precious metals. And by the way, if you have a question about that, you're welcome to give us a call at 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. But Ed, just say a word about, you know, having served as the director of the Mint, about seeing In God We Trust on all the product that you were producing over the years.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So In God We Trust basically started coming on our nation's currency during the Civil War. There was a religious movement at the time that really was praying that our country would stay together. And pastors thought that by having it on our currency would be a reminder that Americans put their trust in God, and from that derives a strong America. It appeared on our currency kind of off and on until about 1906, when Teddy Roosevelt actually took issue with that. People might argue about the authenticity or how evangelical Teddy Roosevelt might have been, but you know, he grew up churched and he knew the Bible, and he said you can't worship God and money at the same time, and it's a sacrilege to have God on our money. And so he ended up redesigning some of our currency at that time, which produced one of the most beautiful coins ever made, the St. Gaudens Double Eagle. And on that Double Eagle, he took In God We Trust off of that, partially because of his belief, and then partially because the artist wanted more room to make a beautiful coin, which Augustus St. Gaudens ended up doing. That caused a huge controversy. And popular opinion was that the Roosevelt was wrong, and eventually Congress passed a law saying that the two mottos, E Pluribus Unum and In God We Trust, needed to be on our coins from that point on. Coin since that law was passed has had that on, in spite of the internet rumor that our new dollar coins don't have it on.
We'll talk more with Ed Moy in just a moment. Stay tuned. You're welcome to join the conversation at 877-93-FAITH. And our phone number is 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. Ed Moy is my guest. Ed has served in a number of roles in the government, most recently as the 38th director of the United States Mint. It was from 2006 to 2011, in the middle of that tenure. Of course, was that significant financial crisis in our history in 2008. Prior to that, he served in the White House as special assistant to the president, and he's a graduate of the University of Wisconsin. We're talking and he has a majors in economics, international relations, and political science. And we're talking, and he also likes to collect coins. So we're having a great time today. And right now he serves, one of his responsibilities as chief strategist for Morgan Gold, which is a gold company. And we're going to get some perspective on investing in gold. I'm interested, Ed, maybe before we go on, though, what was the best part about heading up the U.S. Mint? I mean, what did you most enjoy about that job?
For me, there's no question. It's when my dad, who had been very disappointed with all my career choices, looked at me and said, "Finally, my son, he has a job that makes a lot of money."
Well, yes. Wow. You can use that at parties, right?
So. None of it's mine. Oh, I didn't okay. even get a discount on sure. my products. seriously, there are several things that I really enjoyed about that. One was the chance to serve the American people in a very consequential way during the financial crisis, to be a part of that decision-making and really be on the inside and have a role, have a seat at the table as some serious decisions were being made. And it also, some of the other things I really enjoyed about the Mint, we did some good things. Increasing our profit to $1 billion a year, raising the Mint's morale the Mint ranked itself the 211th best place to work out of 217 parts of government. And by the time we got done, we jumped up to 57, which was, to me, gave me a great amount of satisfaction. But, also going to speaking at coin shows, signing little kids' cards, and just starting them off, understanding math by using coins and the state quarter program, teaching them geography and history through that, all those made being at the Mint one of the highlights of my career.
Were you able to apply your faith in the workplace, the marketplace, kind of day by day, or how did that inform maybe your work day by day?
Yes. And you've just hit on an area that is I'm very passionate about, Neil. And I've ever since becoming a Christian in college, I've explored this intersection between faith and work. We spend so much time there. And it's my belief that all Christians are called to full-time Christian ministry. Some are called to be pastors to equip people for their ministries. Other people are called to the marketplace or to their home, raising families, or to their neighborhood. But each of us have our ministries, and I've been very fortunate to have some significant jobs that God's put me in, including being director of the Mint. So how did my faith affect that? You know, in small ways, just how you conduct yourself on a day-to-day basis makes you a witness to the people around you, which created opportunities to share more deeply about my faith to them. But also, you're in a public policy job, and through that, some of the decisions that are made, as well as how you implement them, have great impact. And so there is a spiritual dimension when you're talking about printing a lot of money, whether or not that is morally the right thing to do, and to be able to bring that gentle aspect into the discussion is a great way for your faith to take a public policy role. Saying that, it's very difficult. When you're in a government job, the government jobs, there's a lot of rules and regulations that are there to specifically restrict your ability. Even when I would send out a holiday messages to my employees, my general counsel would really work hard to make sure to excise any overtly religious language, which is extremely difficult when you're trying to send out an Easter message or a Christmas message.
Now, the there are no doubt challenges which are increasing aplenty, it seems like, in terms of, you know, public faith expressions. Ed Moy is my guest today. We're talking about it. Ed, did you find yourself, you know, thinking about, as Roosevelt reflected on, that you can't serve both God and money? Did you try and, you know, keep that in mind as you were doing your daily tasks?
Yes, but, you know, but you know, while, you know, the Bible says you can't make a god of money, you can serve God when you make money, like I did physically at the Mint. You know, when you take a look at even the fruits of the Spirit, those are things that positively impact organizations regardless of where you're at.
Joe called in and left a question for us. He says, I used to collect gold coins, and now it seems they're out of circulation. How can I go about collecting more coins, presidential coins, to catch up to where I am now? So I don't know if that any advice for Joe on that?
Yeah, so for Joe, there's a couple of distinctions here. When you're talking gold coins, you know, the United States made gold coins until 1934 when Roosevelt eliminated gold from the U.S. currency. And then beginning in 1986, under President Reagan allowed gold coins to be made, but strictly bullion coins to be used by financial investors. Those, you can buy collector's versions of those from the United States Mint. Now, what Joe mentioned was the presidential dollar coins, which were golden in color. So basically, as one way to try to make dollar coins more popular, one of the big complaints about the Susan B. Anthony is that it was about the size of a quarter, and because it was silver, a lot of people confused it with a quarter. And so the law that authorized the Mint to make presidential dollar coins made us make those in a bronzish, a bronze color to make it more distinguishable from other coins. And those, Joe, can get directly from the United States Mint.
Okay, so can consumers actually purchase? I mean, is that how collectors? I'm not a coin collector, I guess. So is that you actually purchase from the U.S. Mint if there's some specific ones that you're looking for?
Yes. To answer that question is for collectors' coins, which are basically better versions of circulating coins. So it'd be a proof quarter. Something that was, instead of just stamped 700 per minute, something was stamped, you know, one per minute on a shiny disc and then polished to mirror-like finish. Those types of collector's coins you can buy directly from the Mint. As far as gold coins in particular, you can buy gold collector's coins from the Mint. But the Mint also makes a gold bullion coins. And here's what the distinction is. Collector's coins people buy because of their rarity, and they hope that it's going to go up in price over time. But in today's financial turmoil around the world, buying physical gold has been a priority for a lot of people. And the United States Mint makes an official government gold bullion coin, which if you were just buying purely for the gold value, that's the coin that you would buy. And the Mint sells those to distributors who then sell them to the public like Morgan Gold does.
So, and you're a chief strategist for Morgan Gold. So let's talk about the gold in the portfolio. I mean, we have a variety of financial advisors on this program from time to time. And it seems like everybody says, well, you know, it could be part of your portfolio, but not the main thing. What are your thoughts on gold or silver as well? I was just telling you, I heard an ad about silver here just the other day on another radio station. There's still a great deal of interest.
Yes. In spite of 2 weeks ago, there was a huge drop in gold prices. Gold went from roughly $1,600 an ounce down to about $1,350 an ounce. I think it's up around $1,400 today. With all those, with the gold prices depressed, people thought people lost interest in gold. But just the opposite happened. The demand for physical gold shot up so much because gold was cheap now. People who were sitting on the sidelines were now buying it up, that the Mint ran out, as well as a lot of the dealers around the United States ran out of gold coins because people were buying them up. So to answer your first question, Neil, gold has always been part of a diversified portfolio. And the reason why is for several fold. One is it's a store of value. So if you can't afford to lose everything in your portfolio, and I can tell you that my friends who were partners at Lehman Brothers saw their stock go from $47 to zero in 2 days and lost everything. If you can't afford to lose everything, you want to have a little bit of money in gold, because gold's prices may go down, but they're never going to be zero. And so you're just going to have something in your portfolio. But second, the reason why people are buying gold now is that they're afraid of inflation. And gold, typically, their prices move in opposite directions of the value of the dollar. So in other words, when inflation goes up and the worth of the dollar goes down, the price of gold ends up going up. So people buy gold as a insurance policy to take the edge off of inflation. And so you would never want an insurance policy to be bigger than what you're insuring against, which is why gold should be part of your portfolio, but be a small percentage of your portfolio.
Would that be the same for silver, or is that a kind of a whole different ratio?
Yep. Silver and gold move in very similar manners, but here's the big difference. A lot of people can't afford to pay $1,400 for an ounce of gold, but they can afford to pay $30 an ounce for of silver. And so silver is the way that the people who don't have as much disposable income, that's the way that they invest in precious metals. But gold is the standard, which is why it's called the gold standard around the world.
Ed Moy is my guest. We're going to talk more in just a moment. Ed served as the 38th director of the United States Mint from 2006 to 2011, and he's served in government for a number of years. He's now, among other things, chief strategist for Morgan Gold, which is a gold company, and talking investments. Your phone number, your involvement in the program, if you'd like to join us, is by phone at 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. We're going to come back and talk a bit about Bitcoin and more with Ed Moy in just a moment.
This is Wayne Peterson, president of HCJB Global, with Beyond the Call. Will was a rough-looking character. Hair down his back, a thick long beard. His reputation for violence even preceded him into prison. His cellmate, who had been saved through a prison Bible study, was not intimidated. He began witnessing to Will and even invited him to attend a Tuesday night study. As the story of the prodigal son was presented, Will accepted Christ as his personal savior.
Luke 15:24 says, "This son of mine was dead and is alive again." As Will served out his prison term, he fervently witnessed to other inmates. More than 40 prisoners accepted the Lord, and today Will works with a church and is leading many others to the Lord. So let your reputation in Christ precede you, and how you treat others precede you. Go beyond the call, and then visit us online at hcjb.org.
Forty-six past the hour. This is Connecting Faith. We're connecting today with Ed Moy, who served as the director of the U.S. Mint 2006 to 2011. And for that time, at least, we don't know about the rest of the time, but he was making money. So anyway, Ed's a successful person now. He's spent some time making money for the U.S. Mint. And Ed, you mentioned a little bit about the kind of actual coins that are in circulation, but there's also a lot of the internet coinage, I guess, and those, it's a lot of electronic transfers these days. Talk about Bitcoin. Just saw an article about that the other day. What's your assessment of, is this the new wave?
You know, I don't know if it's the new wave or not, but I do know that a lot of entities are beginning to play around with it. Whether it's a bit, all Bitcoin is, it's, again, fiat currency. They have their special angle is they will only issue it, issue additional into circulation if there's certain demand for it, and then they're going to cap the total number of coins that they have out there. But it's just like fiat currency. You know, it's how people have confidence in it. And if you take a look at confidence over something that's just created over the internet versus confidence in a country like the United States, I think the dollar is going to be here for a while. That said, people like Amazon is coming up with their Amazon coins. There's other retail companies that have some coin, their own coin redemption programs. And then curiously enough, there's about a dozen states that are exploring making gold and silver an alternative, not a substitution, but an alternative to the U.S. dollar. The Constitution creates a common currency, which is a dollar that's done on the metric system in 100 cents, et cetera. But what it does also say in the Constitution is that states can use gold and silver as a way to settle their debts. And so states like Utah recently passed a law saying that gold and silver can be used to settle debts in the state of Utah, and states like Virginia are considering legislation, at least studying what does that look like. And so there's a great interest given that many people believe that there's way too much dollars out there and are afraid of that they're not going to be worth much, are exploring these alternative payment methods.
Has much changed really since since we established the U.S. Mint? I mean, obviously the sophistication of creating our paper money has changed, but I mean, in essence, it's kind of the same process, right?
Yes, it's the same process. There's been some technological advances, but it's, ultimately it's still the same. You're stamping a piece of metal, and in the end, it becomes currency. There's advances in how you stamp that metal, how you transfer the images on the dies, which are now all done digitally versus the plasters of old. But bottom line is, you're exactly right, Neil. It's still a die hitting a piece of metal to create a coin.
So here's a caller wants to know, says, "I have a lot of old bills, red notes, and some are misprints. Would there be any value to those?"
I don't know the condition of those, but those aren't uncommon issues. And so I would take that in to a local coin store that handles bills, and I have them give an estimate for you. Otherwise, you can go I think there are companies out there like Whitman Publishing who publish price guides for both bills and coins, and you can at least get an approximate of how much you're worth.
Okay. Anna sends a note in and says, how do you go about buying gold or silver, online, or how do you shop for it?
Yes.
She's not related to you, is she? Just calling, giving you the opportunity to do a little commercial for it? No, I'm just kidding.
She might get a free sample.
Well,
not sure,
apparently not me, but yeah, way to go, Anna. Good question.
Yes. There are plenty of retailers out there that will sell you, you know, the U.S.-made gold bullion coins. And you just got to do your homework. Look for ones that have been in business for a long time. Have a reputation of integrity through ups and downs, and have delivered a lot of coins. You know, those are the ones that I would focus on. For example, when I wanted to put gold in my IRA, which is a great way as a first step investment into gold, being the former director of the Mint, I was very careful, and so I did all my research. I knew the reputations when I was director of the Mint, because we kind of kept our eye out on what was going on in the gold markets. And I selected Morgan Gold mainly because the owner, Steve Deeds, had been in the business for 50 years, was one of the elder statesmen, was known for his honesty, and that's where I bought my gold IRA from. And when they said, Ed Moy wants to buy a gold IRA from us, he's the former Mint director, by golly, you know, we'd be delighted to have him be associated with our company. So that's how my relationship with them started. But do your research, because there are a lot of people who've jumped on the bandwagon recently trying to make money off of this gold interest. And you need to be very careful, because you don't want to be taken advantage of.
When you say it's gold in your IRA, I mean, is it – so can we buy it now through, like, mutual funds or that sort of thing as well? Is that how it can work? Or?
Yes. You know, so there's several ways you can buy gold. Well, one is you want to – you know, if you buy gold, you want to buy the physical gold. You just don't want to buy off the price of gold like an ETF or a mutual fund, because if that's still a paper – proxy or paper representation of the gold, that paper can fluctuate. People can leverage off of that, invest in derivatives, a whole bunch of other complicated things. But basically, it means if you want to redeem that paper for gold, you can't. So you want to buy the physical gold if you're interested in gold. And there's two ways to do that. You either go to a retailer and buy bars or coins. I recommend coins, because the government, when the government makes a coin, the government guarantees the content, the purity, and the weight of that coin, whereas very few governments make bars, because bars are certainly easier to make, but there's a lot more chances of fraudulent activity with bars. And so if you're interested and you're an investor who doesn't have a lot of money, invest in gold coins first. Second, you can invest in those coins in an IRA, which is how I've done it, how I started, because I didn't want to worry about the daily fluctuation of the price of gold. I'm buying gold for the long term, and long term, I believe it's going to go up. And so if you believe in that thesis, gold in an IRA takes the anxiety out of gold, and it puts it in a long-term investment where gold is likely to do best in.
So my strategy about getting gold crowns, maybe not what the most solid investment strategy. Just
well, you know, I'll tell you, you know, if we are under a cyber attack and the whole banking system goes down, you can show that crown to a grocery store and see if you can get groceries for it.
Right.
I'd rather have coins.
Okay, that's why he was the director of the Mint and not me, because he can make those wise choices. See, you mentioned about fraud. We haven't really talked about fraud and counterfeits and stuff, but that it seems like that's something where you know, the government has really had to invest a lot more attention of late.
Yes, from several perspectives. One is in our bills, there's been a lot more attention on that, because there's been a lot more counterfeit $100 bills going on. So what you'll see from my colleagues over at the Bureau of Engraving and Printing is a brand new $100 bill that will be coming out this fall. And you know, once you see it, you'll notice a difference. It's very colorful, but it has a ton of new anti-counterfeiting technology in it. On the coins, it's less profitable for counterfeiters to counterfeit coins, although when it comes down to gold, you're going to get some more interest. But again, it takes a lot of equipment to stamp out gold coins, which a lot of counterfeiters don't want to make that investment. And the other thing you see about gold coins that's different than bars, on a bar you can shave off a little bit of gold, and those shavings add up over time for the crook that's doing it. On a gold coin, gold bullion coin, like the ones the United States Mint makes, you notice that there's reeded edges, which means there's little indentations around the edge of the coin. And you'll see that on some of our coins like dimes and quarters. We'll have them too. And that's specifically made so that if they're shaved, you'll be able to see it. So coins have an automatic anti-counterfeit mechanism built in.
Been a great discussion, and enjoyed our time. I always thought my best investment advice was to double your money, just fold it up and put it in your pocket. But Ed suggested a few other recommendations. Ed Moy serves as chief strategist for Morgan Gold right now, and he served as the 38th director of the United States Mint from 2006 to 2011. Been kind enough to join us today, and has sought to live out his faith in the marketplace in some good ways. And Ed, it's great to visit with you. I don't know if there's any final word, just encouragement for the collector or the, I guess, the investor. So.
Well, you know, I have a couple of final thoughts. One is, if you don't have any investment in gold at all, you should consider having a small percentage. I keep mine, my total portfolio has between 5 and 10% gold in. Just give you an earmark. Everybody is different. You got to do what's right for yourself. Second is, I would encourage your audience to consider public service. It's a high honor. It's a really difficult job, but if done well, it's going to be one of the most rewarding things. And I know before I did stints in public service, you sit around the kitchen table complaining about how bad government is. And if you're a believer, you believe that you know, God's place in the public square is being squeezed out a bit. Well, you can change that by either you or encouraging your children to consider stints in public service. Having more believers serve is better for the country.
Ed Moy, who served us well as the director of the United States Mint from 2006 to 2011, serves now as chief strategist for Morgan Gold, also involved in energy business, and has joined us today. Ed, great to visit with you. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks so much, Neil. I so enjoyed this.
You're listening to Connecting Faith here on the Faith Radio Network.